Accession number 32677, Reel 3.
Stan Hooper, Tape 2, Reel 3. You were telling me that you were taken on the boat from COS, and as you got on the boat, you all went down the central ladder.
Yes, and while we were there, the men was all in the bottom. That was the hold of the boat. And I suppose in their minds, they were going to go out to sea, and they wanted to be, if we got hit by a torpedo or something like that, they wanted to be near the ladder, the first ones to get up. I think that was their idea. But eventually, when we were on the boat and down in the hold, I remember at night...
Was it a large boat?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't a very big boat at all. But it had an anti-aircraft gun on there, because in the night, a low-flying aircraft came over, and it must have been one of ours, and they opened up with a gun. And
was it a naval boat or
no? It was just an ordinary boat.
How many of you were there on it?
I think there was about a couple of hundred, I suppose, prisoners, because there was Durham Light Infantry and the Indian Regiment there, and it was all different sorts of regiments. And so when eventually the officer went up, climbed up the ladder like, and he spoke to the Germans and asked them what was happening and all this and that. So then they said that they was going to take us to Greece, to Athens. But in the meantime, he come back, he said, "You'd never believe what happened." He said, "They shot away Arthur Flegg last night," he said, "when they opened up with the gun."
Yeah, so he said, didn't make a good job of it.
Oh, I got that one. Yeah, so...
How long did it take you to get to Athens?
Oh, whole day, practically a day. And when we got to Athens, we got off a boat, and they lined us all up, and then we marched through Athens itself. And all I had on was a pair of shorts, just a shirt. And while I was waiting to be interrogated, I picked up a toothbrush. So I didn't know what a toothbrush was going to do, but I carried this toothbrush in my pocket. So when we got to Athens, and they got us to march through the streets, and as we were marching through the streets, so the people were giving us fruit. They was handing us fruit. Well, the Germans didn't like that idea at all. So the men who were given fruit and managed to get hold of it, they just tore into them, took the fruit off them, and threw it back to the people. And things started to get out a bit of hand, and men were being pushed and shoved with the butts of the rifle. And then eventually, they decided then to get us through the town, and we went into a camp outside Athens. Well, it could have been in Athens itself, I don't know. But I always remember it was a riding stables where they taught people how to ride horses. We stayed there, and then eventually they split us up into our regiment, and being RAF, the RAF was kept apart from the rest of the services. So then we were put in a cattle truck. Now to be put in a cattle truck, and there's no windows, and all you heard was a clanging of the door being shut, and the boat being put across, and no lighting, no nothing, and with all the other RAF men there, who were pilots, navigators, observers, and it was all RAF, and you had to make the best of it, and you just managed to find room to sit down and listen to the train chugging along on the railway track. And then we went for a few days, and there was air raids as we were travelling. So they pulled us into a side track and kept us there waiting for hours, and then they would start off again.
Did you have breaks so you could go to the toilet and get water?
No water, no toilets. Toilet was in the middle of the truck. and you had a thing, and that's where everybody went. People with dysentery, people sick, and you know. And well, you just had to accept it. You just had to accept. Nothing else you could do. Mm. And always remember, there was a Jewish boy that was with us, and they said he had to keep mum about this Jewish chap. They didn't let on to the Germans that he was Jewish, that he was a Jew. So I don't know what happened to him in the end. But after a while, they used to stop the truck and open the door and let you go out for a walk, or walk around, and then the Germans all around you. So you couldn't go very far. Men who wanted to go to the toilet and all things like that, you know. And then they forced you back in the truck again, and you know, slide the door across, and that was your home. But then eventually, one of the lads found an opening on the top, on the left hand side of the truck, and I suppose it must have been about 4 or 5 inches wide, and about 18 feet long, and they managed to force that one open, so they were able to look out. And I remember it was snowing, and the lads had some tins, and they managed to get the tin out, stick their hand out the other window, out the window, and catch the snow. And they brought back the snow in the truck, and the men were waiting for it to melt, and they were drinking out of it. But that was, and I still had nice shorts and just a shirt. That's all I had on. And
had it got very cold in there, fat as a load of men. Didn't
yeah, that sent around so much heat, you know.
Yes.
But the service, some men are very poorly some. But at night, to lay down, I mean, you had to stand up first, and because there wasn't enough room in the truck to lay, and men was almost laid across each other, and you couldn't walk between them. You were always standing on somebody, you know. So eventually, at the end of the journey, we pulled into a station, railway station, and they opened up the truck and let us out onto the platform. And I remember there were some Germans on the platform, and we were lined up there, ready to march. And I remember they spit at us, you know, and raise their fist, and well, I suppose normal for the Germans, I suppose, the way they were being bombed and that. So then they
put us actually in Germany then?
And this is in the Baltic.
Off
in the boat,
got
the boat. Yeah. I think we spent 9 days in the capital. 9 days, yeah.
No water, no real water, no food.
No. And eventually, I was given. They stopped, and I had something to do with the Red Cross, and they gave me a coat, and gave me a jacket, and a pair of trousers. So I was like a civilian then. It was just a civilian jacket. And a pair of trousers, so that's what I wore. And then eventually they put us on a lorry, and they took us to Heidekreuz, in a prison camp. And I always remember when we went in, the men were so taken back, I think, the way we looked, and how cold we looked, and how hungry we looked. And I remember them, because we had two-tier beds, two trunks. And I remember they put up cardboard around the sides, because everybody looked so cold, and well, in the state we were in, we hadn't shaved, we hadn't washed, nothing, you know. So it must have been terrible to see us, you know. And eventually then they gave us some food and made us comfortable. And then they started asking the questions, and where did we come from, what's it like in England, and where have we been to, and all the questions was coming out, left, right and centre. And eventually that's where we stayed in the camp. But if you can imagine a prisoner of war camp, or any camp that's surrounded with high barbed wire and posting boxes, that's what we used to call posting boxes, was these boxes high up, so they could overlook the prisoners, and they had searchlights on them, and machine guns on them, and you just walked around chatting to people, And night times, when it was getting towards evening, everybody wanted to do a walk. So they all done a walk that night, talking to different fellas, and talking about home, I suppose, talking about food. I'm afraid women didn't come into it. There was no such thing as girls. It was all food. All food.
You're fantasising on what meal you were going to have when you were home.
Oh, yes. Yes. And they used to walk around the camp, all in the same direction. All in the same direction, anti-clockwise.
How many do you think were in the camp?
Thousands.
And were they all allied? English?
Oh, yes. There was English, Canadians. Australians. Mm. South Africans.
Any Americans?
No. No Americans.
What do you think happened to the African contingent that they picked up?
No idea. No idea at all. I mean, they split us up, and the area for the area, the army with the army. Mm. And that's... I can never understand why, though I was in the RAF, and I was in the RAF regiment, why I was attached to this camp. Because it was a camp full of aviation people, bomber pilots, fighter pilots, navigators, observers, engineers. But I think we were the only ones that come from the RAF regiment.
What sort of rations did you get to eat?
Very, very little. First time we had Red Cross parcels. And everybody enjoyed the Red Cross parcels. And gradually, as time went on, we were only having half a parcel each. And then as time went on again, it came to one parcel between eight people. And I remember when they used to put the stuff on the table, there was a packet of cards, and you had to pick up a card. And the highest card picked first. So you were the first one to pick. And you could pick, they're all the same, exactly the same. I mean, a prune, they cut a prune in half, cut a prune in a quarter. And all things like that. So everybody had a share. And I remember when we used to get our, they used to call it broad bread. And I remember we used to get our bread, well, just enough for four slices a day, that's all, no more. And we used to get sweet soup. And if you found any sweet in there, you was lucky. And mornings they used to bring a churn of coffee, but it was undrinkable. So men used to wash in it, because it was hot water, because there was no hot water. And because all your washing was done outside in the open, and you had these troughs, and you turn the tap on, and it didn't matter what time of the year it was, winter, December, cold, ice. And I can see men out there now, still wearing their overcoats, wiping their faces with their hands, just wiping their face, that was all, in their hands. And it was too cold, they'd take their coats off. So then going back to the bread, I always used to cut the crust off, and I used to save the crust. And when we used to get the Red Cross parcels, we had a dried milk, and it, what we used to call a clim tin. I kept a tin, and when I cut all the bread up, which was the rind of the bread, and the bread was awful. The German bread was awful, and you never tasted anything like it in your life. And then I used to, when I had enough bread, I used to get some water and put a drop of water with it and make it into a sponge. And I used to roll it in my hand and drop it in the tin. And then I used to, because we had a stove in the camp, in the hut, and I used to go over and put it on the stove. And by the time it finished, it come out like a bowl, like a cricket bowl. And I used to slice it up. So that's what I used to do with the crust. But some men who had bread and they eat it all at once. That was the finish of it. They didn't want to save it. Some men saved a little bit, you know, for now and a little bit later. But some men just didn't bother.
Did you get fed like once a day or twice a day?
We got fed about twice a day, and the food was awful. awful.
Did you prepare it yourselves?
No, the Germans brought it. Mm. They brought it in turns, and then you went up here. You'd do that, and then just poured it in. And sweet soup.
Was it very cold there in the Baltic?
Oh, dreadful.
So it was in the winter and you were there?
Oh, in the winter, yes, yes, yes. And, I remember there was once in the camp, I think the men were so bored with life that they decided to pour water on the parade ground and make it into an ice rink. So all the men lined up and they had these buckets and they went down and they made it one big long line and they filled these buckets up and they passed them one to each other and then they would pour it on the parade ground. Eventually there was enough water there to ice up. So in the morning when they come down, the parade ground was all iced up. Now can you imagine men, pilots, navigators, observers, university, plenty of brains, trying to see how far they could travel with sliding. They made a line and they run and they used to see how far they could go if they slid along. And there was a man up the other end judging the distances. And, you know, this is what they got up to. Anything to...
Did you do any, like, shows, like ENSA shows?
Yes, yes, there was shows put on there. They saved all their Red Cross boxes and they turned them into seats and they had a little theatre. Now, can you imagine these men dressed up as women?
Try not to.
Yes. And some look really very nice, I can tell you. You know, some of these men, they really took the part. So, we used to sit down there with the Germans every night, huh?
What did you used to say to the Germans?
Well, when we were in the huts, all the beds was two-tier. And the lighting wasn't all that great. But there was an instance that what used to have the BBC News. Now, I said every day
was
at
that
a certain
illegal?
Time.
Illegal, oh, yes. I was going to say, yes.
I said that was at a certain day. I said, and they used to go all around the camp. And there was two or three of them. And well-educated. And they used to give you the news from the BBC. And when they gave you the news, there was one fellow who used to stand beside the window, down one end, another fellow who used to stand beside the window up the other end. And when he was given the news, he used to say, goon coming. And he used to stop reading. And then the boys used to get on their beds and start banging and chatting. And, you know, and the German used to come in, he used to stand there, morgen. And some could speak very good English. And they used to have a chat, and the boys used to say, in their cell, when are you going to go? How much longer are you going to stay here, you know? Well, some used to stay that long that they couldn't finish the news. So therefore, you could go somewhere in another hut to listen to the news. And this is how we kept in contact with a bit mine. The wireless set that was kept in the camp, nobody knew where it was. The Germans hunted high and low for it, but they never found it. I said they buried it under tons of potatoes once. I said when the Gestapo used to come in, I said at night time, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning.
So they never found the radio?
No. As I say, sometimes if the Germans were in the huts, they got fed up with waiting for the Germans to go, so then they used to walk out and go into another hut. But, you see, with the information that they were giving you, and there was quite a few chaps had maps on the wall, and they showed you the German positions and all things like that. They used to put pins up, and little tiny flags. And, you know, the Germans must have thought to themselves, you know, well, why is that flag up there?
How do they know that?
Yeah. But they knew there was a radio. But like I said, you know, the Gestapo used to come into the camp maybe 1-2 o'clock any time in the morning. Rouse. They just turned you out of the camp, and you went outside. It could be raining. It could be cold. You know, and they keep you out there. But they always kept an airman. They always kept one in the hut. And I mean, because the Germans, if they come across anything, they're worth pinching, they'll pinch it, you know. But it was amazing what they managed to make in the prison camp. It was incredible, incredible. I mean, if you look at all walks of life, there were solicitors, there was bus drivers, taxi drivers, butchers, carpenters, bricklayers, hairdressers. Everything you could think of was in that camp. Now, I remember one night we were ready to go to bed, and they had a false wall. They had a false wall, and in front of this wall they had like a bit of a cupboard. So they took the cupboard away. It's only made of wood. And there was this false wall, and they used to lift it off, and you could go out. You could go out into the camp itself. So that night, they had a dummy head in the camp. Now, nobody knew where that head was going to go to. And that night, they decided to bring it into our hut. Well, as you can remember, I mean, I was on only an LAC, not like the rest of them in the camp, where pilots, navigators, bombers, you name it, very, very, very educated, very educated. So they made this dummy head, and to look at it, you think it was real. Marvellous. So what they done was, the fellow who was going to escape moved into another hut. So that left that bed empty. But if the two-tier bed, and where they put the head was very dimsy, dull, no lighting, hardly anything. And they put the head in there, and they got some blankets and made like a bully. He shoved a cigarette in his mouth, you know. And then they just left. So when the Germans used to come in, open the door, there used to be a long bolt on the outside, wooden bolt, and they used to push that one back. And they used to come in, and it was an officer, and a low-ranking German. And they used to count you, one by one. And they start off with, everybody had to stand by your bed. Andy Benton, stand by your beds. And when they used to have the roll call, they used to count in Germans, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And when they get to a certain number, the boys used to jump in and either reduce the number or higher the number. So instead of being 23, they used to make it 25. Mm-hmm. And it was just a hustle and bustle going on. Mm-hmm. The German didn't know where he was, you know. So then he called it to a halt. And then he had to start again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they do the same thing again. So then the Germans obviously got fed up with that. So then he whipped out his gun, and he said, if you don't keep quiet, he said, I'm going to shoot somebody in there now, you know, I'm not going to put up with this. So then he used to go around counting. And by rights, I mean, if you were sick, unless you were sick, you could stay in bed. Otherwise, you had to stand up beside your bed. But this one, they brought the dummy head in and made his body in blankets and turned his face to one. The light was very poor. It wasn't an amateur dummy, I can tell you. When you think of all the sculptors that could have been sculptors in the camp, painters, and they made this head, proper hair they gave him, and placed his head to one side. And then, so far as all the lads in the hut was concerned, he wasn't there. So when the Germans, he say, I'm cranking, yeah, nine, he used to go say, you know, rams, and the boys, I'm cranking, oh, yeah, he used to go, you know. And they say, all right, count him. Well, the other one that should have been in the bed had gone into another hut. Mm. And then I remember one night they made him stay in somewhere in the camp, and they had to come back and recount again. Well, the head had gone. Ah. The head had gone, so that I left one bed empty. So they managed to get somebody in from the next up to go in there and take up the bed. But they managed to do that in time, and they covered it up. Well, this is what they used to have in the camp. Well, they were specially picked men. They were what you call the Tally Old Club. And these were very, very picked men who could speak fluent German and knew how to converse with the Germans. And they used to carry chocolate with them and cigarettes. And when they used to meet the Germans, they used to go to them and have a chat and give them a cigarette or a bit of chocolate, you know. And this is the way they got things into the camp. Man, if the Germans found out what was happening, he'd be sent up to fight the Russians, you know. So they
were they sort of elderly guards? and all?
Yes, yeah, I suppose in the 30s, 40s or something like that, you know. And he always used to wear a blue overall, weather caps, just like we had when we were in the forces. And he used to carry a long bar with a crook on the end, so he could put his finger in. And as he'd go in the camp, so he pushed this one into the ground near the hut, just to make sure that there was no tunnels being made. So then, one morning, everybody had to go and pray in the morning, each hut. You go out there, and some of the men was half-dressed, some wasn't dressed at all, and some had looked awful in appearance, you know, just let themselves go. And when we used to go and pray, everybody in the huts was all lined up, all on the prayer ground. And the commanding officer, the RAF squad leader, he used to be out in the front, and then the German commandant would come, and they salute each other, and he used to say, "Good morning, gentlemen, morning, gentlemen." Well, you just imagine what answer he got, didn't you? So then he started counting. Everything was all right. And then the squadron leader said, "Well, I got some good news for you." So all the men stood there, right? And he said, "We have managed to get two prisoners home."
Wonderful.
Germans could not believe it. All the men jumped up and down. They were cheering and chucking their hats on the floor. And honestly, you thought it was the end of the war. To see them, you know, everything was out of control. And then the German commandant, he could see what was going on. So then he called in the dogs. And nobody liked the German dogs, Alsatians. And then he brought in his soldiers with machine guns, and they just slapped the machine guns on the floor and pointed the machine guns at those on prayer. And the commandant said, "Right," he said, "I pull everything in order." So we had to calm all the chaps down. And after that, there was what you call a sheep count. So he got everybody in the camp to line up, and he counted each one like a sheep. And you went through a set of guards on both sides, and he kicked you off as you went through. But little did the Germans know that some of the boys already been counted, come back again, got counted again. There was absolutely chaos. So nobody knew. Well, they had an idea, but I didn't know. I mean, it was top secret. And you didn't know half what was going on in the camp. You was just a nobody, you know. But in a prison camp, if you had an idea how to escape, and you thought it was feasible that you could get out, then there was a committee
that
was used for escape committee, and you had to go before them, and you laid it all out on the table. And if they thought you could get away with it, they would help you. They had everything. Clothing, money, debit cards, everything. Don't ask me if they done it, but they done it. And it's a very amusing sometimes how some of the airmen just took the opportunity to try and get out of camp. Even if there was a German working with a ladder, you know, he'd go over and pinch the ladder and start walking out the camp, you know, and the Germans on guard would say, "Well, where's he going?" You know, and they shout at him. And he dropped the ladder and put his hands up and turned around and said, "Okay, yeah, all right." So he'd speak little things like that. And as I say, it was all hush-hush in the camp, all hush-hush. And only the very few knew what was going on. And as far as I was concerned, I don't think there was any, though when I say tunnels, we just didn't know, but we had to give up some of our planks in our bed that we used to sleep on. You give up one. So